It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with the clown himself. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle from the Grange Bottle. What's up, man?
What's going on, man? Here come the clowns, I guess.
We ready. So, what's up, Bubba Rosenbaum?
What's going on, guys? Just watching the end of the Panthers-Jags game. Gardner Minshew's had a heck of a game, but he just got stripped for the second time.
Yeah, well, you got to be like those. Kyle and I listen to all the sports radio shows, and where you keep an eye on the game while we're recording and let us know the Gardner watch on Gardner, I guess, and see if he is able to get the ball back and the defense gets the ball back for him, and like a thrilling last minute heartbreak for the Panthers. I don't know.
Yeah, last I had seen, Gardner was 21 out of 32 for like 312, two touchdowns, no interceptions, something like that.
Terrible wow. Quarterback, right? He's terrible.
Terrible, didn't know. Clearly, not to be
Gardner
quarterback material.
Dead.
Let's bench him and put in injured Thomas Zirk.
Yeah, I remember our good friend Igo mentioned that. I saw that recently. I think it was a tweet, and I laughed really hard. I forgot about that.
Another thing, you always heard about how Gardner wasn't very mobile. And then earlier this year against the Texans, he ran for 60 or 70 yards in a game.
Yeah, well, Scotty Montgomery ran Gardner Minshew and Kirk Benkirk away. So, I mean, that's talent. I think you could say Scotty Montgomery had the talent to run talented quarterbacks away.
And different things can happen. Just because a guy has a game where he runs for that kind of yardage doesn't necessarily mean he's the most mobile quarterback in the world. But with Gardner Minshew, I wasn't concerned about his lack of mobility for sure. He showed it last year at Washington State where he would improvise when the heat was on.
Yeah, I mean, it was impossible for him to be successful here under Montgomery. I don't think Tom Brady could have been successful here under Scotty Montgomery, but thank God we ain't got to worry about that no more. Anyway, so guys, did y'all enjoy your college football Saturday? The Pirates obviously played Thursday night, so we had a full Saturday of watching college football. A lot of teams were off this week. You had Alabama and Clemson, the number one and number two teams in the nation, both off, along with a lot of other teams. A lot of teams off this past weekend. And there wasn't a lot of marquee matchups. It wasn't a very good Saturday for college football. There was some highlights. I think, Bobby, if we start in the American, you look Friday night, and you had there was two big matchups in the American this weekend, but you start Friday with UCF and Cincinnati up at Nippert Stadium, and it ended up being a 3-point win, 4-point win, whatever the score was, 27-24, I believe, for Cincinnati over UCF, but really Cincinnati dominated the second half of that football game.
Yeah, that was the game that Cincinnati, much has been made, and rightfully so, of the tremendous defense they've played over the last season and a half under Luke Fickle, and also the way they run the football. Michael Warren ran for a little over 130 yards, nearly 6 yards per carry, and they won the turnover battle 4-1. So that played a huge role in that game because Dillon Gabriel, UCF, that's what he threw for right around 300 yards, and didn't complete a bad percentage. I think he was something like 25 out of 45, but he threw those three picks, which were huge, and Desmond Ridder for Cincinnati. He didn't have great numbers in terms of yardage, but he was fairly efficient, and he had two touchdowns and only one pick, so that played a big role in that one.
Yeah, Cincinnati's defense, man, is scary good. They'll knock you naked and steal your clothes, I'm telling you. They're tough. That game, boy, it scares the hell out of me playing those guys later in the season at Greenville. They're physical beyond belief.
Yeah, that's certainly how we want the Pirates to look in the future in terms of the type of defense and the way they run the ball and stop the run. I talked about what Warren did, and in that game as a team, UCF was outrushed by Cincinnati 192-126.
Yeah, and the Knights, score a touchdown there late in the fourth. You end up not getting the ball back. Cincinnati picks up the first down. They're able to run the clock out, and Bearcats pick up the big win. Interesting note, though, Cincinnati's lost their last two road games, on the road at Pitt and on the road at Cincy. And, guys, as we sit here, the American, I haven't looked at the polls today, but I know SMU was ranked. I know UCF was ranked. They'll probably fall out now, but Cincinnati will probably go in and be ranked. And Memphis was ranked in the coaches' poll, so now they'll probably be ranked across the board after their win over Monroe yesterday. We got three, and if UCF hung on, there's potential for four teams from the American in the top 25.
Yeah, you look at Memphis and SMU, those are still two unbeaten teams. Like you said, Memphis is 5-0 and SMU is 6-0. And we'll talk about that SMU game in a minute. What a game that was, with them rallying from down 30-9 to take down Tulsa in triple overtime, 43-37.
Yeah, I said, you know, I thought Tulsa was maybe going to pull the upset in that game. And it was mainly because I knew Tulsa played good defense. Tulsa always plays SMU well for whatever reason. And I kind of thought SMU, first time in the top 25 since the Craig James era, people in Dallas actually paying attention to them. I kind of thought they may come out not flat, but almost, I don't know the word I'm looking for, overwhelmed a little bit, and I think they did. And I think Tulsa was extremely focused and took the fight to them. But hats off to SMU in the second half, fighting all the way back, tied it up. Tulsa misses a field goal in regulation, missed two in overtime. And, Bubba, there was one point in overtime where they actually stripped SMU, get the football, and all he needs is a field goal to win it, and they missed the field goal. So Tulsa gave that game away in some aspects, but pass off to SMU for continuing to fight, getting it into three overtimes and finding a way to win it. But if you're Tulsa today, you have nobody to blame for that loss but yourself.
Yeah, and Tulsa is 2-3 now. Obviously, they have a lot to prove and so forth under Philip Montgomery. So it'll be interesting to see how the rest of their season goes from here after suffering such a disappointing loss. But kind of elaborating on your point, Kyle, as far as SMU playing as a ranked team, that was their first game as a ranked team, which surprised me a little bit because I thought at some point June Jones, I thought they had probably been ranked, but they had not. That was their first game as a ranked team since 1986.
Yeah, no. June Jones had like one good year, really, if you look back. Something else about Tulsa. They're a very good 2-3 football team, but their schedule is brutal. The schedule the rest of the way is because the West of the American is so loaded. Their schedule is really tough the rest of the way. There's a couple games they're going to have an opportunity to win, but
hopefully it's not East Carolina.
I'm sure it's going to be interesting to see by the time they get here, last game of the year, how many wins they have. They are certainly capable of making it to a bowl game, but they're going to have to pull off a couple upsets down the stretch to do it because, Bubba, are you where you can pull up their schedule?
I am. That's what I was actually pulling it up right now because I had
read off Tulsa's schedule.
Tulsa is
You mean SMU?
No, Tulsa.
Tulsa to see what they've got left for the second half of the year.
Yeah.
Okay. Tulsa, they have – just 1 second. Tulsa's remaining schedule from this week, and they have Navy at home. Then they go to Cincinnati. Then they have Memphis coming to them.
Oh, my God.
At Tulane. Mm-hmm. And then UCF at home.
Mm-hmm.
Houston at home.
Yep.
And then they come to us for the finale. So yeah.
That's what I'm telling you. I think they're a good team. They can make it to a bowl. I just don't think their schedule is going to allow it.
That's amazing.
If they're going to get there, they've got to beat Navy. They've got to beat Houston. And they get wins. They got to beat us. And they got to find a way to win one more.
They're good enough that I would not be surprised to see them win two or three of those games. But at the same time,
That's really rough.
That's a challenging enough of a stretch. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if they've not won another game before they come to Greenville.
It can start snowballing because when you're used to losing, then you start losing again, it can get your head.
Yeah. And, you know what else? When I see a schedule like that, what it tells me, and I know everybody thinks I'm a homer because I love East Carolina. But
I definitely think you're a homer.
Oh, thank you, Homer Simpson. But anyway, when I look at it, the American Conference, and I'm not Mike Oresco, but how can you not argue that our conference, being the American, is a power league? How can you not argue that?
It is, man. Our league
baseball,
is loaded.
Baseball, basketball, that's, football? I mean, how can you not argue?
Well, I was telling my Southern Miss friend James last night, we do a little pick'em between him and another friend of mine as the USM fan. And
Greg,
I won't pick them again this week, by the way, between us three, three straight weeks. And he said, you won it on the American game. They took Air Force to beat Navy and Army to beat Tulane. And I knew Navy and Tulane was going to win those games because I'm telling you, man, this league is loaded. This league right now, take Clemson away, we're as good as the ACC. So, I mean, it's, if not better. I mean, this league is a very tough league to get through, and it's a daunting task. And as far as the Golden Hurricane go, if they don't beat Navy this weekend, I don't think they'll get to a bowl. They got to beat Navy, but now the problem is you got to get focused to stop that triple option coming off of a heartbreaking loss to SMU. Now their defense is really good, so. They may have a good shot against Navy, but that's a must-win if they want to get to a bowl.
Speaking of Navy, you're talking about them playing Air Force, obviously, in the last –
and
the last few years, that's what Army's had Navy's number, and then that's what Navy hasn't been winning the Commander-in-Chief trophy the way they had been in years prior. But Malcolm Perry led the comeback yesterday, and the Navy had been in control for a lot of that game, and then Air Force scored something like 16 unanswered, and then Malcolm Perry had the go-ahead touchdown with a little over 20 seconds to play.
What was the final of that game? I actually thought Navy – I must have called the score wrong. I thought Navy won by 9.
Well, they did, but then it was 34-25, but then after they scored the touchdown I don't know if the ball was being laddled around or if it was a fumble or pick or what, but Navy had a defensive touchdown right after that. Yeah,
two or three, and then had a defensive touchdown.
But I was like you until I looked into it further, and that I was thinking that they had won a little more comfortably than what they obviously did.
Well, that's a good win for the midshipmen and a good win for the conference. Air Force has been playing good football this year. So that's a really nice win for the conference over Air Force. So,
speaking of another academy, how about Tulane? They continue to roll. What a job Willie Fritz is doing there with the Green Wave.
Yeah,
up at Mikey Stadium, and then they won 42-33 over Army, and then they ran for over 300 yards. They topped 250 on the ground every game this season, with the exception of one.
Yeah, and I want to point out, you know, Billy Chris at Navy, or excuse me, at Tulane, first year I think he won 4 games. Second year he won 5 games. Third year he won 6 regular season, 7 with the bowl, and then this year they're probably looking at a 9 win season, something like that.
They have a tremendously challenging schedule down the stretch. I was looking at that.
They're 4-1 right now, right?
They are. They're 4-1. They're off to their best start since 1998, and that win at Army yesterday, that snapped a 15-game home win streak for Army.
What's the rest of the Tulane schedule? Do you have that in front of you?
Give me a moment, and I'll read it off. But I'm pretty sure I think they maybe go to Memphis and to SMU, but I'll look it up for sure.
You know, I'll actually take them again. If SMU and Tulane were playing next weekend, I would take Tulane.
Yeah, so would I. Next week they have UConn, but after that they have at Memphis,
I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're going to beat UConn.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I'll say that they'll probably run for 400 yards against UConn.
Bet you they run for more than that.
But anyway, after that, starting on October 19th, they play at Memphis, at Navy, then they have Tulsa at home, at Temple, UCF at home, and then at SMU.
I actually like them against Temple. I like them against Navy. I think they can beat SMU. And I'm going to say 8-4. 8-4 is my call.
So 4-3 for the Green Wave down the stretch.
Yep.
You mentioned that Memphis game earlier, Kyle, 52-33. The Tigers taking down the Warhawks and down in Monroe. And that was a game that was much closer than the score indicated. I know you were following that one and listening to it on the radio on TuneIn, I'm assuming. It was 39-33, and then all of a sudden it finished 52-33. Kenneth Gainwell of Memphis, who had a huge day, 14 carries for 209 yards, 2 touchdowns. He had about a 70-yard run, and then they had a pick 6 to help put that one away.
Yeah, I was watching it on ESPNU, and then me and my wife went to go get dinner, and I was watching it on ESPNU on my ESPN app in the Jeep. And then we went to the restaurant. I checked the score, towards the end of the meal, and it was 39-33. And I said, "Oh man!" I said, "Monroe's cut into it." I said, I get done eating, go out to the Jeep and watch the rest of it on the way home. And I get on, turn it on to watch the rest of it. And suddenly it's 52-39, literally in a matter of seconds. And how did you say that happened, Bubba? I asked you, you said you,
yeah, it was
Tulane scored and then got a pick 6 right away, right?
Yeah, in a matter of probably no more than 20 or 30 seconds. Kenneth Gainwell of Memphis had a 68-yard touchdown run, and then they had a, 35, 40-yard pick 6.
Yeah, because it was literally 5 minutes later, and I was like, what in the world happened? So,
yep.
Nice win, actually. That doesn't sound like much, Memphis beating to Monroe, but Monroe's a pretty good football team, almost beat FSU. The top half of the Sun Belt, the Sun Belt ain't what it used to be. You used to see a Lafayette or whatever, and you'd think easy win. I think Appalachian, sometimes I think having a team to chase is good. I think everybody kind of chasing Appalachian, extra exposure for the Sun Belt on ESPN with their weeknight games on ESPNU and then all the rest of their games on ESPN Plus. You got App, you got Monroe, you got Lafayette, Arkansas State, Georgia State. There's some good teams in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, there really are, and we'll talk more specifically about the Sun Belt here in a little bit. Before we move on from the American, the only game that I don't believe we've referenced thus far is USF up at UConn. Charlie Strong and the Bulls were in desperate need of a win. They improved to 2-3 with a 48-22 win over Randy Edsall and the Huskies.
Yeah, and ran for over 300 yards in that game. I don't know if South Florida's a little better than what we thought they were, or if UConn's just as bad as they were last year. I think it may be some of both. I think South Florida may be a hair better than what we thought, and I think UConn's just as bad as they were last year. Maybe a little bit better, but I don't know. UConn was the worst FBS team I'd ever seen last year. They were just tried. And really, Bubba, I say that, and people are going to chuckle. They had the worst defense statistically in the history of FBS football.
Yeah, they did. And we had obviously seen a couple of the worst defenses in the history of in FBS. Back in 2010, Russ' first year, that one was pretty bad, right around 40 points a game.
Yeah, we still won 6 games.
And we found a way to win 6 games thanks to Dominique Davis and that offense. And then
Lincoln
and
Riley.
Yeah. And then I guess the other one would have been in Scotty's second year when we gave up something like 45 points a game.
Yep, and UConn made both those defenses look like the steel curtain.
Yeah,
last
year, as bad as we were, when we threw and ran for over 300 yards against UConn, that That spoke volumes.
Exactly.
So, but
that South Florida, you know, it, we'll know more about South Florida. They actually, it's funny, with this off week, and then we go to UCF, they play two games against opponents that we'll learn a lot more about the Bulls the next 2 weeks before we play them in Greenville. They play BYU this week, and that's in Tampa. And then they go to Navy the week we play UCF. So it's going to be interesting. That BYU game really interests me. BYU style of play, I think, actually, South Florida might match up well against them.
Right.
So I'll take BYU to win that game, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's closer than people think. That Bubba, you would be thought about it at nausea. I mean, obviously, we had to play UCF first, but if we're going to win five or six games this year and really make a marked improvement on the record versus the last few years, we've got to beat South Florida.
Yeah, got to be 4-4 at the end of October for sure.
Yeah, because it'd be tough to, you know, you figure to be sure we'll find a way to beat UConn. Nothing's a guarantee. That is senior day up in Connecticut. But you figure if you can win that one, if you can win one more, that South Florida one's the one you feel like you can really have a chance with in Greenville. That would put us to 5 wins. And then you never know, man. If we're sitting there 5-6 with Tulsa coming to town Thanksgiving weekend, I just want the opportunity.
Right, yeah. If we can get it to that point, especially, like you said, with the tough slate that Tulsa has between now and then, you never know what their psyche is going to be like. Depending on how they fared between now and then, they could have an interim coach. Who knows? Phillip Montgomery could have already been ousted, but we'll see.
You never know.
They could be coming in there 2-9 or 3-8 and having already made a coaching change.
Yeah, and I tell you what, our schedule's not easy down the stretch either. Obviously, South Florida is going to, I think that's a pretty even matchup, actually. And then UConn, you figure we're better than, but we got to play Cincinnati, top 25 team, SMU, top 25 team, and UCF, top 25 team. So we got three really tough games down the stretch, and then two games that you feel are very winnable, and then a Tulsa team that I think if they played us right now would handle us, but by the end of the year, who knows?
You want to move on and talk about the other games of regional interest, like some of the ACC games? I know NC State and Wake Forest did not play this week, but you had North Carolina going down to Atlanta, and they took care of Georgia Tech like I expected them to.
Georgia Tech's awful.
Yeah, and Georgia Tech's not very good, to say the least, especially on offense. And Sam Howell had a huge day for the Tar Heels. He completed at least 65%+ of his passes for close to 380 yards and 4 touchdowns. And Georgia Tech, like you said, and they're 1-4 and very much an extreme work in progress under Jeff Collins. And there were several great finishes, even though it was a light day in the ACC. Another one close to home, you had Duke rallying from a 26-3 deficit, and then they ended up falling right at the very end, 33-30 to Pitt.
Yeah, I never turned it back over there. I saw Pitt was blowing them out at halftime, and I never flipped it back over to the game. I started, you know, watching Tulsa and SMU and some other things, and I never put it back over there. And I wish I would have been able to see the end of that, but you know, they rallied back, you know, and then Pitt ends up winning it in the end. You know, Pitt's looking pretty good this year. They're gonna challenge for that division title again with UVA. And yet another one. I didn't see this one either, Bubba. Louisville sounds like they pulled off a last second win over Boston College, or at least it was a close game.
Yeah, they did. They kicked a 41-yard field goal with just over a minute left to win 41-39. So there you have game five for Scott Satterfield, and the Cardinals are 3-2, and they've already topped what Petrino and company did last season.
Yes, Satterfield off to a good start. Louisville has some talent to work with. I don't know what the hell happened with Petrino.
I think it was just outside looking in and then hearing what they said, like on that Notre Dame broadcast and season opener, they had some real culture issues there in terms of the interaction between the coaching staff and players, and they're just talking about Coach Satterfield and this staff, how much things had improved in that regard, because just the lines of communication, like you didn't have players going into the coaches' offices on a consistent basis to have those conversations you need to have and so forth. So I think there were some real foundational things there, more so than the talent.
Yeah, I know, because I watched them last year and I thought they had talent. One other thing I
wanted to point out about that Pitt-Duke game that I didn't get to mention, there were a combined 10 turnovers in that game, and Duke rallied, like I said, from down 23 despite having 6 turnovers.
Good Lord.
Yeah, they threw 3 picks and fumbled it away 3 times and then still had the opportunity to win that ball game. Pitt scoring with 38 seconds left on a 26-yard touchdown pass to win it.
Do you remember the UCF East Carolina game in 07 where UCF just started turning the ball over on every possession?
Yes. I also remember a game that we found a way to win against UAB. Was that in 2011?
Yeah.
We turned it over 7 times and won.
Yes. UAB was awful that year.
Gosh.
And we played – I remember being so aggravated with that game. First home game or second home game of the season, and I know UAB was terrible, and we barely won that game because we turned it over 7 times. It was unbelievable. But the UCF game in 07 was a blast. They started to just fumble after fumble.
A little bit about that UCF game that you're referencing, I remember Chris Johnson was at the opening kickoff of the second half, and he took to the house. And then I also remember him catching a swing pass or screen pass on the south side and taking it toward the boneyard. Was it what's now the boneyard? Obviously, the boneyard wasn't around back then, but he took that about 80 yards to the house. He when he caught it, it looked like the UCF defender had an angle on him, and then he took it to the house, outrunning folks the way he so often did.
You know, and I think about that, and we'll get back to the scores, and I wonder, you know, obviously you ain't going to find a Chris Johnson every day. But, you know, there's no excuse for our skill position right now not to have more speeds to make some big plays. There was some misses in recruiting the last few years at the skill position, and to me there's no excuse for that. But anyway.
That's something that Donnie Kirkpatrick and this staff talked about back throughout camp. They didn't dwell on it, but they just matter-of-factly mentioned it, just saying that that's one of the concerns they had, and the way explosion plays, those chunk plays may be tough to come by because of that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big things with holding back our offense, and people aren't realizing it.
Before we move on from the ACC, I know a game that you mentioned earlier off the air.
Or Miami.
Miami and Virginia Tech, the Hokies had a 28-0 lead, and then all of a sudden Miami under Nikosi Perry and quarterback that threw for more than 400 yards and 4 touchdowns after Williams had thrown 3 picks. What a job by the Hurricanes, but the Hokies found a way to pull it out.
Yeah, the disappointed to see Miami couldn't find a way to win that one. You come all the way back, get it all the way down to the 10-yard line, get 2 shots from the 10 to try to win it there at the end or tie it there at the end, and can't get it done. I was aggravated. I was normally used to Bubba. You know, we'd all be pulling for the Hokies, but things have changed in that relationship. And so I'm just disappointed to see that the Canes didn't come back and win it. But congratulations, I guess, to Virginia Tech. And that was a win they needed desperately. And, you know, I kind of thought, looking at the rest of their schedule, I kind of thought Miami was going to win that one and get on a bit of a roll. And not so much.
Yeah, that's what – when I saw that one, actually saw a decent amount toward the end of that game once I saw the comeback that it occurred. But the Hendon Hooker for Virginia Tech, new quarterback the Hokies were playing, that's what – not great numbers. He was 10 out of 20, but 184 yards. He took care of the football, 3 touchdowns, no picks, and then he had 16 carries for 76 yards as well. So not a bad first performance, or at least in a starting effort for that young man.
At this point, Kyle, let's welcome into the show our good buddy Jay Sunhalter. Jay, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to have you back. Kyle and I, we talked about the American and the ACC. Now let's pick up with the SEC. Obviously, the biggest game there yesterday was down in Gainesville at the Swamp. You had the Gators taking care of Auburn.
I was really looking forward to seeing that game and seeing how those teams would react, especially Auburn was favored by a couple points. But with their freshman quarterback, I knew that was going to be tough on the road, especially against Florida's defense, who's playing so well.
Yeah,
like I liked Auburn to win that game. I had been impressed with Auburn so far, and Florida really dominated it. So go in for the Gators down in the Swamp, and you know, is it a two-team race in the East? Everybody kind of, you know, had already given the East to Georgia, but Florida might have something to say about that.
You have the Gators going to Baton Rouge to take on LSU, who's also undefeated. So that's going to be a tremendous interdivisional matchup.
That'll be a lot of fun.
The thing with all those teams is the schedule's so tough in the SEC for a couple of those teams that have to go to the other division, like Florida having to play LSU from the western side. So it's almost like who's going to be the healthiest at the end and who's got the toughest schedule. You know, it's going to be tough to overcome.
What is that noise?
It sounded like an old rocking chair or something.
It did.
or squeaking door.
Squeaking door.
But no, another matchup, when we're talking about Florida going to LSU next week, how about Georgia and Florida with that huge SEC East matchup here in, I guess it's about 3 or 4 weeks now, on November 2nd. And I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, that'll be fun. What used to be the world's largest cocktail party, Georgia, Florida, that'll definitely decide the East. What about as far as yesterday goes, Bubba, you know, we talked about Georgia and, we talked about Florida and Auburn, but what else was there yesterday in the SEC of note? There wasn't a lot. You had Ole Miss Vandy.
Not a whole lot. You had Georgia taking care of business against Tennessee. They did struggle a little bit early. Tennessee, you knew they would come out at home and put their best foot forward. But Georgia, the cream rose to the top for sure there. And Dave's beeping in. Hold on.
Yeah, I just ignored it. Oh, Jesus Christ.
All right. As far as that went, Georgia took care of business like you would expect them to on Rocky Top. And then, let's see, outside of that, like you said, it's a pretty light day in the conference.
Ole Miss over Vandy. You had LSU handling Utah State as expected. There wasn't much else going on. Seemed like Missouri played somebody.
Missouri took down Troy 42-10. Like you said, Ole Miss beat Vandy 31-6. Those were the we've mentioned the five games that were played in the SEC yesterday. Moving on to the Big Ten, you had Wisconsin taking down Kent State, and they pitched a third shutout. But the main game, or one of the main games in the Big Ten yesterday, was, of course, at the Big House, you had Michigan getting a much-needed victory over number 14, Iowa.
Yeah, I liked Iowa to win that game. I had not been impressed with Michigan at all this year, but they weren't very impressive yesterday on offense, but their defense played well, and Michigan got a much-needed big win over Iowa. And then I guess the other game of note in the Big Ten yesterday would have been Ohio State taking down Michigan State.
Yeah, Ohio State and took down Michigan State 34-10. And something else I wanted to point out regarding that Michigan game, you talked about how the Wolverines definitely didn't play particularly well on offense, but they limited Iowa to one rushing yard, and they also won the turnover battle 4-1. So those two numbers really show you why they won that game 10-3.
Yeah, Michigan, I mean, I think they have a lot of motivation after they got destroyed by Wisconsin, and you know, if they truly have fight, you know, they're going to try to get out of the hole they kind of dug themselves in a couple weeks ago and try to improve. But I'll tell you, their offense, unless it gets significantly better, I mean, when they start to play Ohio State at the end of the year, but Michigan State, Notre Dame, some of these other games they have, they're not going to be able to overcome it.
Yeah, I agree. And then that's what Penn State, that's what they really started strong and then just had it on cruise control against Purdue. So it's going to be interesting to see when Penn State's taking on the likes of Ohio State, how they match up.
Yeah, you mentioned Penn State. Like you said, had it on cruise control in their game yesterday. Minnesota beat Illinois. Illinois is awful. Was there anything else in the Big Ten? Is that pretty much?
You had Nebraska. They took down Northwestern. Nebraska, of course, had been crushed by Ohio State.
Yeah, that was a good win for Nebraska. They needed that.
Nebraska needed to bounce back, and they certainly got it, taking down Northwestern 13-10 yesterday in Lincoln.
Well, how did we forget the most important game of the Big Ten? Because it ain't a friggin' Big Ten game, even though it technically is. It just didn't seem like one. The Maryland Terrapins took down Rutgers yesterday. Blew them out. Was it 48-7, something like that?
48-7.
Yeah, so, yeah, Scotty Montgomery's offense a little bit back on track there at Maryland, taking on a terrible Rutgers team.
Rutgers might be a high school team. They're the worst team, man, I've ever seen.
Yeah. Them and UConn need to play each other.
Yeah, that would be a good matchup for one of them to build some confidence and get a win.
Pillow fight.
But pillow fight. Rutgers already fired their coach, so.
Yeah, a lot of rumors that Greg Schiano is going to go back and be the head coach of Rutgers again for next season. So,
They may have him join here next week.
Thanks. Wouldn't be bad. Any worse.
Yeah.
And before we move on from the Big Ten, guys, I mentioned Wisconsin, how obviously not the toughest of schedules, although they did take down Michigan a couple weeks ago, 35-14. The Badgers, and they're sitting there undefeated, and they I think next week they play Michigan State. I definitely expect them to take down Sparty, although that could definitely be a game. And then you have them traveling to the Horseshoe on the last weekend of October, October 26th, to take on the Buckeyes.
Yeah, so I wasn't paying attention to what you said, so I don't make fun
of it. I just think Wisconsin and Ohio State are ahead of everybody else right now.
Yeah,
Wisconsin's good, man, in terms of Ohio State. In fact, how good is Ohio State when you think about it? They handled Michigan State yesterday, you know, in dominant fashion. But then you look at Cincy. Cincy, you know, destroyed Marshall a couple weeks ago, shut them out, basically. And then last week they beat UCF, and Ohio State beat Cincinnati like they were Gardner Webb. So, I mean, Ohio State is them in Wisconsin. And then I would say Penn State right after that.
Yeah.
Are by far the best teams in the Big Ten. You guys want any? Where are we going next, Big 12 or Pac-12?
Let's go Big 12 next. With the Big 12, you have we were talking about the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, and as it used to be known as, I refer to the Red River Shootout instead of the Red River Rivalry, as they like to call it now to be politically correct. But anyway, you have that matchup between Oklahoma and Texas looming next week. But the Sooners took care of business, as you would have expected them to, after a little bit of a slow start against Kansas, taking down the Jayhawks 45-20. I did get a good first-hand look at Puka Williams, the running back for the Kansas Jayhawks. To put it mildly, I mean, he has, or in other words, he definitely has a different gear, to say the least.
Yeah, I love watching that dude play, man. And Kansas just needs a few more pieces to put around him, but he's good. They didn't get embarrassed by Oklahoma yesterday. Les Miles is making his his presence known in year one. The nice win over Boston College. They haven't been getting blown out by people. They've been competitive. So, Oklahoma ended up winning yesterday. What was it, like 48-20 or something like that?
Yeah, 45-20, Oklahoma won. And then you had Texas up in Morgantown. They took care of business against the Mountaineers, 42-31. Of course, those two programs had that crazy game last year down in Austin where Will Greer, I believe it was scoring on a two-point conversion to win it. So now you had Texas returning the favor this year in Morgantown and setting up the matchup next week with undefeated Oklahoma and one-loss Texas.
Yeah. Go ahead, RJ.
That's going to be a great game. I mean, and with Texas going on the road at West Virginia, I know West Virginia's maybe not as good as they have been in some recent years, but that's kind of a trap game in Texas. And they're pretty impressive to win that. And I mean, Oklahoma looks amazing, but I think this is going to be the first game where they've played, you know, a real defense. So, and plus it's going to be a rivalry. So yeah. I expect that to be really close.
Yeah, I do as well. And some other storylines in the Big 12. How about Matt Rhule and the Baylor Bears? They're 5-0. They got a big 31-12 win at K-State yesterday.
Yeah. Baylor, he's going unnoticed by a lot of people. You know, last year, I think some people slept on, they went to a bowl last year. And, when Matt Rhule took that thing over, a lot of people thought it was going to be a situation where he was going to have to take several years to rebuild it after things went. The way things happened with the rape allegations and all with Briles and company. And I think Matt Rhule is one of the most underrated coaches in college football. I thought that when he was with Temple, and I still think he is with Baylor, man. He's a hell of a football coach. And nice win for them yesterday. And nice win for Iowa State over TCU.
Yeah, that was a
Cyclones.
That was a huge bounce back for Matt Campbell and the Cyclones. I mean, they had lost 23-21 to Baylor, and if they're going to contend in the Big 12 with Oklahoma and Texas, so on, like a lot of folks expected them to, they really needed that one yesterday against the Gary Patterson and the Horned Frogs.
And another team that needed to win, Texas Tech, with a win over Iowa State.
Yep, they took down
Oklahoma State.
They took down Oklahoma State. The Cowboys were ranked 21st, headed into Lubbock, and 4-1. And like you said, Matt Wells and company, they got the 45-35 win. And I guess one of the highlights of that is you had a first game starter at quarterback in Jet Duffy throwing for more than 400 yards and four touchdowns.
Yeah, so nice win by the Red Raiders down in Lubbock. Anything else in the Big 12? That pretty much wraps it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, moving over to the Pac-12, and one of the storylines there, first of all, Oregon appears to be the team to beat for sure. They took down Cal 17-7.
I think Cal would have won that had they had their quarterback.
Yeah, That's certainly an excellent point. And Oregon, and they do, and we'll find out a lot more about them next week as they will be traveling, I think, to Seattle, if I'm not mistaken, to take on a Washington team that got upset by Stanford 23-13 yesterday.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that late last night, and nice win for Stanford over Washington for sure. And so that the Cardinal had been, I guess, underperforming a little bit. And so I don't think a lot of people saw that one coming.
No, and speaking of a couple of games that folks didn't see coming, how about Arizona? The Wildcats, of course, lost their opener out at Hawaii, and they've won four in a row since. And yesterday they won 35-30 over Mel Tucker and the Colorado Buffaloes.
Yeah, I watched some of that, too. Nice win for Arizona. Kevin Sumlin's doing a good job there. Their quarterback, what's his name? He was supposed to be injured and out for that game. They ended up playing. So that may have called Colorado a little off guard.
Yep. And then also another surprising one.
obviously UCLA, they've really struggled under Chip Kelly, but and yesterday those struggles continued as you had Oregon State taking down the Bruins 48-31 at the Rose Bowl, and the Bruins are now 1-5.
Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was just gonna say I can't believe, and I know they're very young and their schedule's been pretty tough, but I can't believe they've had that much struggles there with Chip Kelly, because I know people maybe didn't like him in the NFL, but I mean, he was amazing at Oregon, and I mean, they looked good in that Washington State game when they came back, but pretty much everything else, they've been pretty pathetic. Yeah, I just can't believe they're that bad.
I've heard some people speculate that his offense at one time was extremely creative, and people maybe have called on to it. If you notice, well, Scott Frost does similar to that, and he hadn't had the success at Nebraska. He initially had at Florida or at UCF. So it could be, for whatever reason, people are picking up on that style of offense that they like to run.
Sticking out west, taking a look at the Mountain West, you had Boise State taking care of business against UNLV, and the Broncos are now 5-0, and they have a big one this coming week against Hawaii.
Yeah, that is a big game. Hawaii has been a big surprise in the Mountain West this year. A couple of nice non-conference wins. Beat Oregon State and Arizona. No, was it Arizona they beat, Bubba? They got two Big 12 wins.
Beat Arizona
and Oregon State, yeah. And then Hawaii. I tell you what, where's that game at? Boise and Hawaii.
That game is at Boise, and then the following week, Boise has to go to BYU on October 19th. So the next couple of weeks, obviously that's a non-conference matchup against BYU, but the Broncos could very well be challenged these next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I really like to see. I wish that game was at Hawaii. If that game was at Hawaii, I would take the Warriors to pull off the upset, but you being in Boise, Hawaii can still do it, man. I think Hawaii is legitimate.
Yeah, I agree. I would not be surprised to see that be a four-quarter game, and they're so familiar with one another, obviously being conference mates, and those games the next 2 weeks against Hawaii and BYU are ones to really keep an eye on from the standpoint of Boise right now is in the driver's seat in terms of the bid to the New Year's and the selection six.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah, New Year's Six Bowl. Excuse me.
Yeah, Boise is right there. Yes, it's definitely one of the top candidates for that, along with several teams in the American. So,
Go ahead. Something else in the Mountain West, Colorado State, and their struggles continued. They fell yesterday to San Diego State. The Aztecs are now, I think, 4-1, if I'm not mistaken. But the Rams are 1-5, and after three straight 7-6 seasons to start Mike Bobo's tenure there, and they went 3-9 a year ago, and like I said, 1-5 now. So it's going to be interesting to see where things go with Coach Bobo.
Yeah, it will. I would imagine Bobo's in the hot seat. McElwain had a lot of success at Colorado State before he went to Florida, and is doing pretty well. Year one of Central Michigan, yeah. Huge win for them over Eastern Michigan yesterday. If they end up going something like 8-4 at Central Michigan this year, I wonder if Colorado State would try to bring McElwain back home to Colorado State.
Yeah, you actually created a nice segue for me, Kyle, because that was what I was going to bring up next, is because I had seen that result, that sound victory that the Chips had over Eastern Michigan yesterday, and that didn't surprise me so much that they won, but how they won, the fact they won by about four touchdowns. And like you said, McElwain, granted Miami has kind of been pretty mediocre, but still for Central Michigan, the way they've been down the last couple years to take Miami to a 17-12 game, that's why it didn't surprise me so much that they were able to have that mild upset over Eastern Michigan.
Well, I haven't even down, but they got a lot more talent than Central Michigan.
Right, exactly.
He outcoached their coaching staff and got his guys to play up to have a chance to almost pull that upset. And then they beat Eastern yesterday, and Eastern was rolling, you know. So, nice win by the Chips, and, you know, Coach McElwain, like I said, it'll be interesting to see if Colorado State tries to bring him back home. Anything else in the MAC yesterday of note? I don't...
Not really. I know
we talked about... Oh, yeah, there was. Ohio beat Buffalo in overtime.
That's the score I was going to mention, because Ohio is a lot of people's favorite in the MAC, or one of the favorites, and so... that was of note, them knocking off Buffalo.
Toledo beat Western Michigan. That's a big win in that division. Toledo and Western Michigan arguably were the two favorites in the West.
Yes, and so, that's the same Rockets team that, of course, took down BYU a couple weeks ago. So you expect Toledo to be right there, and it appears that's going to be the case for sure.
Yeah, the Rockets, Matt Campbell. Is that Matt Campbell?
That's where Matt Campbell was before Iowa State. And Jason Kendall now.
Yes, that's right. And so the Rockets would have a big win there in the MAC West. And Northern Illinois lost to Ball State. I don't think they made a very good hire. What we got left, man? Conference USA and the belt.
Conference USA, and you had UAB taking care of business yesterday.
Oh, my God. That game would never end. Weather delay. That game started at, like, 7 o'clock and was over with around 2 a.m.
Yep, and I think it was 35-20, if I'm not mistaken. I think that
that's
was
right,
final,
yep. UAB with the lead over Rice.
Bill Clark and the Blazers, they did have that, I think it was a 2013 loss to Western Kentucky, but they're 4-1, and, again, we've talked about it. What a remarkable job he's done there. And didn't you say, Kyle, that the Blazers have not lost a game there since they started football back?
They have not lost a home game in Legion Field since they brought back the program.
Yeah.
Jay, what did you want to say about Bill Clark?
I did one of their games 2 years ago. So, you know, during the week we had to interview him and just the preparation and stuff. And he's a top flight coach, and he's somebody that is going to have a bright future if he ever wants to leave. But what he's done at that program is amazing, just as far as building it up from nothing. And then the excitement down there, because I remember playing down there, there'd be nobody in the stands. And, you know, now there's actually excitement around the program and people are supporting it. But he's a legit football coach.
Yeah, he's done a hell of a job for the least UAB. And, I would imagine we'll be getting a Power Five job at some point. Other games of note to CUSA yesterday. ODU lost to the team that's leading the East, Western Kentucky, 20-3. I might watch some of that game. ODU had their chances, particularly in the third quarter, and just did not take advantage of opportunities.
That was a game. Obviously, we knew. From having played them the previous week, that the ODU offense is very much a work in progress with Stone Smart, the JUCO transfer, and they had a running back and a receiver beat up, and they did not play in our game against East Carolina, but that offense was held to something like 170 yards of offense yesterday.
Yeah, not very impressive offensive numbers from the Monarchs. And Western Kentucky, like I said, they're leading the East. I think Florida Atlantic is going to have something to say about that. But, you know, early in the year, Marshall was looking good. And they get, you know, destroyed by Cincinnati. And then Middle Tennessee beats Marshall convincingly yesterday.
Yeah, that's what that Marshall offense I saw, like you said, was like 23 or 24-13 yesterday against Middle. So that was one, like you said, I had higher hopes for Marshall, or higher expectations, I guess I should say, more so than hopes. But after what they did against Boise State, I thought they would have fared better up to this point.
Oh, yeah, me too, but they haven't. And, you know, it would be interesting to see. Doc Holliday's kind of been up and down up there, how they'll react if they don't pull it together and get to a bowl. I don't think Conference USA is very good this year, so Marshall still could turn it around. But last couple weeks, they have not looked good.
Last but certainly not least, taking a look at the Sun Belt, that is a league that has looked very solid, and obviously we'll start closer to home on the team that has been the standard there in recent seasons and appears that it will be the standard right there at the top this year is, of course, App State. We had the coaching change, and then Coach Drinks got the big non-conference win over North Carolina. But that was actually, in my opinion, that was expected, not so much an upset, just like he said after the game. And the Apps are 4-0, and they have a big one this week with Louisiana taking on the Raging Cajuns on Wednesday night down in Lafayette.
I'm sorry, Bubba. Yeah, App State, Lafayette, Wednesday night, ESPN, primetime game with everybody watching on Wednesday. We're no competition, obviously, on a Wednesday night. And I love these midweek games, man. Some people complain about them, and I guess I'd be complaining about it if East Carolina was playing in it. But App and Lafayette, you know, what else are you going to watch on a Wednesday night?
But
I agree. I mean, I'd rather have something on a Wednesday or Tuesday night than nothing. I'd rather have football every single night.
Yeah, me too. Exactly.
At least have the option to watch it. Otherwise, you just turn it to like NFL Network or ESPNU and watch a rewind of the games this past weekend. So at least
that's
something
a good
live.
Game, man. Appalachian Lafayette is a great game. That's you're talking about potentially the conference championship game being played right there. You know. On a Wednesday night in October.
Well, and I was talking to you guys off air just about some teams and these guys having guys that are NFL prospects. Appalachian State, I did one of their games last year, broadcasted it, and they've got some guys that'll play in the NFL that's young talent. So they recruited, and developed really well up there. But they've got, I mean, they're well coached, but they've got talent. So it's not like a surprise when.
Yeah.
Hey, surprised to everybody in Chapel Hill, though.
Right. Well, they're always surprised.
How dare these boys from the hills come down here and beat us?
Yeah, Jay, a funny story kind of along the lines of what Kyle was saying. I had several of my App friends say that day when they were walking out after the victory that some of the Tar Heel fans said that they were just appalled by how loud and boisterous the App State fans were.
How dare you cheer loudly for your team in our stadium?
I mean, that,
we're going to have to get our special security guard, Bronson Simmons, after you.
They have a noise ordinance over there. You can't be too loud.
Jay, do you happen to know Bronson Simmons?
Next year, he's
a good guy.
Next year, we're going to have to buy tickets in the upper club so we're not exposed to fans like these Appalachian State fans.
And, no, we don't want to be around them.
And for our listeners, I'm obviously joking with how I say that. That's a pet peeve of mine. Just like Eastern Carolina folks, I believe Kirk Herbstreit is who it was that said Appalachian State instead of Appalachian State.
Yeah, a lot of people do that. It's not as bad as Eastern Carolina. It's just a mispronunciation of a region. Yeah. But it, I imagine it gets on their damn nerves. So,
but also,
yeah, I still don't get how people can call it Eastern Carolina, especially when it's their job to announce it or know that. It's,
well, you know, I think some
it's
of
like
it,
calling
I,
Southern California South California. Like,
I think some
not
of
the
it,
name of it.
I think some of it's intentional, Jay. I really do.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, yeah.
Just like the Southern Carolina Gamecocks.
The Southern Carolina game. There you go.
But no. As far as the Sun Belt, in addition to App State and the way they have it rolling, another team. It's an App State alum, Sean Elliott, down at Georgia State. The Panthers, of course, most
up and down.
Yeah, the win that they got in the season opener at Tennessee, but yesterday they got a nice win over Arkansas State.
They did. They got a nice win over Arkansas State yesterday, and they had a nice win over Tennessee, and they're 3-3. And just a couple weeks ago, Western Michigan destroyed them. So, I mean, they're a little up and down, but when they're up, they're really up. And the Sun Belt beating Arkansas State's a big deal. And, of course, beating Tennessee is a huge deal. So, the Panthers, and we go to Atlanta next year to play Georgia State. So,
yeah.
It won't be easy.
No, not at all. And some of the games that are really going to be critical in the race in the Sun Belt, we talked about App State playing Louisiana this year. Louisiana is 4-1. Their lone loss came in the opener, 38-28 at Mississippi State, and they're averaging right at 45 points a game. So they've been tremendous under Coach Napier and getting that program built back up. ULM has to go to Boone, and that's a ULM team we've seen is pretty capable. Even though they don't have the best of records, they nearly won in Tallahassee and lost in overtime to the Seminoles. And then you also, in the App State-Troy matchup, the final week of the season, November 29th, that's one to really keep an eye on. And you were talking about Georgia State. App State has to go down to Atlanta to take on those guys at the former Turner Field.
Yeah. Speaking of Georgia Southern got a W yesterday. Who were they playing? I remember seeing they won.
They won on Thursday. They
that's right. South Alabama in overtime.
2017 in overtime.
Yep, that's right.
But, Jay, is there anything else regarding this week's games? Not necessarily about the Sun Belt, but just anything that stood out to you in general, whether it's a team or an individual?
Off the top of my head, no. Jay, what about you?
I think, like, starting next week, we're going to learn a lot about all these teams because the game's coming up. This is the first weekend where there's a ton of good matchups. You got Texas, Oklahoma, LSU, Florida, Southern Cal, Notre Dame. There's just every time slot has top 25 matchups, and I think there's like four teams that are both ranked playing against each other. So I think coming up here, we're going to learn a lot. I think in the SEC, you know, again, it's going to come down to those. It's going to come down to SEC championships. It's going to come down to Auburn, Alabama, and then if Georgia, you know, can beat Florida in a couple weeks. So I just think, you know, this first part of the schedule, you know, we kind of know who's been good, but I think we're going to all learn it starting this week. And I also think the teams that can play the best defense are going to be the ones that ultimately have the real chance to be in the national title hunt. Because I think teams like Oklahoma with the new defensive coordinator, you know, we don't know how good that defense is, but we know their offense can do it. But is their defense going to be good enough? So I think we'll learn that too against Texas this week.
Yeah, you mentioned all those good games this weekend coming up again. It's a great time to have an off week for the Pirates. I mean, you know, of course we played Thursday night this week, so we had this Saturday off, but not a true off week. There wasn't a lot of good games. So next week, yeah. good weekend to be off. I'd rather us be playing, but it's a good weekend to be off. A lot of good games to entertain you. In terms of looking back at this weekend, if there's anything that we've missed that I haven't touched on that's not coming to mind as far as an individual performance goes or anything, I can't think of it. So looking forward to watching more college football. And Wednesday night, you got App State, Louisiana, Lafayette. Thursday night, there's a couple games. Doesn't Syracuse play NC State Thursday night?
Yeah, they do.
So you got Syracuse, NC State Thursday, and I think maybe there's another game also Thursday night. Seems like there's two. So
yeah,
that'll be fun.
Yeah, I don't recall right offhand. It's a Sun Belt game. It's Texas State and UL Monroe.
Yeah, so there you go. Monroe will probably blow out Texas State. That probably won't be a particularly good one, but NC State Syracuse probably will be. And Wednesday night, App State Lafayette, that'll be a good one. And then you got a full weekend of good games to watch. And Friday night, there's some good ones. Miami, Virginia, Colorado, Oregon will be a good one. That's a big one in the Pac-12. And that's before we even get into all the big games Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little that NC State Syracuse matchup. Obviously, NC State. That's a team that's coming off a loss down in Tallahassee, and then Syracuse. Yeah, they're 3-2, but
when they've played the better opponents on their schedule, and maybe not even necessarily the better opponents, and like that ugly loss they had at Maryland, 2-3-2 teams that really need this one.
Yeah, absolutely, Bubba. I think one game under the radar in the AAC next weekend is going to be Memphis at Temple.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good one, and there's another one. Hold on, I just saw it. I'm looking here at the schedule right now. Memphis Temple's a good one, and that's going to be ESPN2 at 12 noon for everybody that wants to check that out. And hold on, there's another one I just saw on the schedule that caught my eye. Cincinnati at Houston. Houston, yep, has been a little disappointing, but competitive in every game. Will Cincy be focused coming off of the win over UCF? Might be a chance for Houston to pull off the upset. And
those are always games. Yeah, and those are always games I look at. Like, are they going to be focused the next week, or even like Memphis playing at Temple? You know, it's only an hour difference, but that's 1 hour different time zone. You know, so that's going to be 11 o'clock kick for Memphis and Temple, you know, with the victory over East Carolina, you know, going in with some momentum. So those games, you know, that Houston Cincy and those games next week in the AAC, I think will be interesting to see how those home teams fare.
Yeah.
Navy and Tulsa, also ESPNU primetime game in the American. I'll tell you one thing you can say about the American. They get good coverage, particularly with all these damn conferences having their own networks now. There's plenty of AAC coverage on the ESPN family of networks. And it'll be a fun weekend next weekend, guys. Bubba, you got anything else?
No, the only other thing I was going to add as far as the AAC East race, with Cincinnati taking down UCF on Friday night, just now that obviously you can't count UCF out by any stretch of the imagination, but then that Cincinnati Temple matchup, depending on what those two teams do between now and then, I think that's maybe like the last game of the season at Nippert Stadium, so it could come down to that in the East.
Yeah, no, for sure, and I think UCF will still have something to say about it. But guys, unless you got anything else, I guess we'll wrap it up. For Jay Sunhalter, Dave Richmond, and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Kyle Barber, and you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.